Hello, everybody. This week on Spiritual Graffiti Podcast, we are having the Barefoot Vedic Astrologer. That's the underscore barefoot underscore Vedic underscore astrologer underscore on Instagram. Unfortunately, Ruby wasn't able to make it this week, but she'll be back next week. Hope you guys enjoy this episode. It's all on Vedic astrology and 2024 forecast. Please go check out Carol, the Vedic astrologer. She's awesome. Love her stuff. Hope you guys enjoy. Hello, everybody. We're back with the Spiritual Graffiti Podcast. And today I have a very special guest, the Barefoot Vedic Astrologer. Hello, everybody. Hello.
G'day, Pete. Hello, everybody.
I've known you for how long? You're probably like one of the first people I actually met on social media that was kind of into the spiritual stuff. You know, I've probably known you the whole time I've ever been on Instagram.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah. So I thought I'd have you on my podcast just to put you out there, because I love your work and I love your knowledge. And yeah, so why don't you just tell us a little bit on how you got into this?
Thank you very much for your gracious introduction, Pete. I guess, like, when I was 12 years old, I bought my first deck of tarot cards at the market. And so from a very young age, I was very interested in it because I had lots of quite spiritual experiences when I was a child. By the time I was 27, I had my astrology chart just done like a report that was sent to you. And the guy, he just cut and pasted a whole heap of books and stuff into a manual report, and he said, oh, you might want to find out your Saturn returns coming. And I'm like, oh my god, Saturn returns sounds ominous, what's that? Yeah. And you know, oh, Saturn, oh my god. So Saturn came into my life then, and I certainly have found out about Saturn over the last 35 years or so. He's a big player in our universe. So that's how I really got into it. I started off with Western astrology, the tropical astrology, but it's like cooking without spice.
Yeah,
it's very bland. And I began really serious study of the Vedic system, the Vedic sky, in about 2009, and I haven't looked back.
Yeah,
because it's just profound.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's also the history. It feels like there's so much more depth in the Vedic from, you know.
Yes. The use of the stars and the lunar, because the moon, it's lunar based. So we look at where the moon is for a day, which is one nakshatra, which is a nakshatra is like a moon mansion or a moon sign. And the use of nakshatras is, you know, like Western astrology just can't deliver that. So if people that know their Western astrology charts and have never looked at the sidereal Vedic concept, I would encourage you to do so. And if you know your chart, it's quite easy to convert it to sidereal. So, for example, if you've got a Western sun at, say, 4 degrees of Leo, the very easy way to convert it is because – the difference in the zodiac is about 23 degrees, so it's almost a sign's different.
Yeah.
So if we want to convert Western to sidereal or Vedic, so if you're born, say, and your sun is at 4 degrees of Leo, you just add 7 degrees on, so that would be 11 degrees of Leo, and you take it back a sign, so it'd be 11 degrees of Cancer. So if you want to convert your chart, you can just – that's a simple way to do that.
Yeah.
So the difference between tropical and sidereal too, Pete, is the tropical doesn't take into precession of the equinox. that the equinox actually moves like a degree every 72 years. It's imperceptible to our human eyes, but it certainly does move. So over 3,000 years of miscalculation with the tropical zodiac, it's resulted in 23 degrees difference.
Okay. So just a quick question. In Western astrology, you're a Cancer or a Leo? I forget.
Me, I'm a Leo.
And Vedic, you're a Cancer. You're considered Cancer. Yeah.
That's right. So I'm a homebody.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, it's like there's so much to kind of touch in on. You know, I'm in Ketu, so I'm going through that right now. I kind of want to touch in on that because I feel like that doesn't really correspond to Western, right? Or what would you?
No.
What would you relate that to? Or can you relate that to in Western?
Well, Western astrology doesn't, that's the difference. Western astrology doesn't have the Mahadasha system. And that's what you're talking, you're in Ketu Mahadasha. Maha means great and Dasha means period. So you're in the great period of Ketu. And this is calculated from the lunar nakshatra where your moon was when you were born. Because Western astrology doesn't use nakshatras, it doesn't even look at the planetary periods or the Mahadasha system. So you can't really compare it. You can compare Ketu to the south node. Ketu is the south node of the moon. Rahu is the north node of the moon. And Western astrology just calls it the south node and the north node of the moon.
Yeah. So would it be like almost like a north node return or a south node return?
No, because Western astrology doesn't even have the capability or the nuance to calculate the Vimshatori Dasha system. So it doesn't even come into their calculations. They don't use it at all because the nakshatras and the, you know, the lunar-based system, they're solar-based. They're based on what the sun does.
So, I mean, let's get existential first, I guess. Do you think that from knowing what you know in terms of astrology, do you think we come here – like, do you think we have free will or do you think we have to have certain experiences?
I think it's like multiple choice, Pete.
Yeah.
You know, like when you got an exam, you got multiple choice questions.
Yeah.
So you can, you know, like A, B, C, D, or E. So there's a certain amount of free will within that choice, you know?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of things are predestined, but you can also, you know, kind of shift your destiny to a certain extent by your attitude and your, you know, your practice, what you do, because we are magnetic creatures, so we can attract or repel things as well.
But do you think there's a
certain... But it depends, you know, astrology is basically a map of your karma too. So if it's your karma to get bitten by a dog, you're going to get bitten by a dog. But if you've kind of done some work, you might just get a nip and he just penetrates the skin and maybe does a scratch. And if you haven't done anything, he might bite your leg and you get, we don't have rabies in Australia, but I knew you might get bite your leg and get rabies and die. Do you know what I mean? Like there's
Yeah, I mean, well, I know I've had experiences in my life where I mean almost like maybe I should have died and nothing significant really happened in the end, you know. And I always think about that because it's like, you know, what are those moments, you know, you hear people having near-death experiences or stuff like that, or you know, like what was there a window of opportunity or window of exit, or, you know, like
where exactly. And I think we do have an opportunity to exit, you know, like the multiple choice thing comes back, A, B, C, or D. A, I'm going to exit. B, I'm going to come back but have a memory of that incident. C, I'm going to come back with no memory. Or D, I'm, you know, do you know what I mean? Like there's multiple choice. Yeah. So, and I think we do plan the exits along the way. You know, there's a couple of chances that we can get off the mortal coil. And that's why a lot of people have those near-death experiences. And grandma or grandpa, grandpa will come out and say, no, it's not your time yet. What are you doing here? You know, go back.
Yeah.
That sort of thing, because it's not your time. But you need that experience to maybe broaden your consciousness, to advance your consciousness.
Yeah. Now, in terms of like big picture, like the planets, do you see the planets as like guardians? Do you see the planets as like almost limitations? Or like, you know, I always get obsessed with the like Gnostic worldview sometimes of like, you know, this is kind of like we're trapped here and we're trying to kind of transcend this experience. And to me, like the planets just seem like the logical force that kind of limits or restricts us.
Well, particularly Saturn, he's the master of restriction, and he's definitely a gatekeeper.
Yeah.
You know, like he's the furthest out. He's the planet that we can see with our naked eyes. All the other ones we can't. So he's furthest out. He's at the limits of the, you know, seeable unit, the observable universe with our naked eyes. Obviously, telescopes and other technological advances have made us able to see a lot further.
Yeah.
So the planets are like, they talk about like the planet Saturn is the vehicle for Shani. The planet Venus is the vehicle for Lakshmi. So it's like how they get around and deliver stuff to us. Do a download. So they're living beings as well. When you look at a planet, it's looking back at you too. Like they've got consciousness, but we, like the moon, for example, it's dead, it's black dust, but that's the Pitri Loka in the Vedas. So our eyes can't see that's the realm of the ancestors. Whenever we die, who turns up first? The ancestors. The ancestors are always there, say, hey, girl, mate, where are you back? And that's the Pitri Loka, the moon, the first stop. That's why the moon is so important. It's the closest body to the earth. So yeah. It affects the earth the much. So, you know, we could look at the planets being like the earth is our physical incarnation. The moon is our astral body.
Yeah.
The sun is our soul. The sun is our spirit.
Yeah.
The sun is the Atma in Vedic astrology.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like, part of me kind of always looked at it as, like, almost like the planets are the chakras of, like, the cosmic force.
Yeah, you could look at it like that in a really big picture.
And then
just for the Milky Way galaxy though, because like we're just one little pimple on a pumpkin.
Yeah. It's funny because you mentioned the moon about like that being like kind of the first stop. And you know, I was looking recently, there was a lot of philosophies and I think it was Jay Guchev. I probably said his name wrong, but he was like a philosopher.
Yeah, Gujarat, yeah. That funny. Yeah, it's got that funny pronunciation.
Yeah, and he talks about the moon being what traps us in this reincarnation cycle.
Which equates to our mind. So it's our mind that traps us. The Maya of the mind.
So what, our attachments? Like our...
Our memory. Life is just a memory. It's our memory. The moon is the memory as well. So the mind is such a tricky thing, Pete. I was thinking about that just the other night because the lunar nodes, like Rahu and Ketu, they're the ones that trap there. Because what happens is the lunar node, Rahu and Ketu, which are so fascinating and kind of I specialize in them, because what the lunar node is where the earth and the moon, so the earth goes around the sun and the moon goes around the earth, and where the path of the earth going around the sun and the moon going around the earth meet, that's the nodes. So there's the ascending node, which is Rahu. So that's our desire. Rahu is the reason we incarnate, because we want something. We want some experience. Rahu wants experiences. He's the attraction principle of the universe, whereas Ketu is the tail of the serpent. He's the repulsion. With Ketu, you don't want material experience. You want to get off the mortal coil, mate. It's the moksha karaka, the indicator of liberation. So it's our desire to have material things that trap us here. Our mind does that. And that equates to the moon. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, but like, so do you think that, so you're saying like Rahu is what kind of pulls us in here?
Yes, he's magnetic.
Yeah. So like, do you think literally we need that to get pulled in?
Well, you have a desire. You have a desire. Yeah. Wherever your Rahu is, I could talk about your Rahu.
Yeah.
No, wanted me to.
No, I was, I mean, like, I'm thinking of, like, even, I know my son Luke is going through Rahu Dasha, right? Am I saying that right?
Is he? I thought he was in Saturn.
No, maybe I'm wrong. But he, I know he was recently in it. Rahu,
I remember you messaged me about it.
Yeah, because he's definitely having like feelings of like abandonment, and like
that's Saturn.
Yeah,
Saturn brings rejection. Scared of rejection.
Yeah, he feels like he misses me a lot.
No,
like,
he's in Ketu. He's in Ketu.
Oh, he's in Ketu.
He's in Ketu.
Oh.
So he's 8. That's been, he's born 2015, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's in Ketu. And Ketu is seriously scared of being abandoned.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. This is the nodes. But you're older. You've had lots of experience.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, even if you are rejected, you're going to survive.
Yeah.
You know?
It's just interesting, like, why, so you think that we choose these like placements, or is it like a hierarchy, or like the universe chooses these placements, or is there even a difference with that?
I think there might be a bit of consultation going on, you know?
Yeah.
Like you go evolution and talk, you've taught, yeah, like, you know, there might be like some spiritual helpers that say, well, you know, look, you know, if you choose that option, that might be a little bit difficult. Maybe you won't get it all done, but, you know, give it a whirl. You know, I think there's a certain amount of free will, a certain amount of you have a debt and you need to start paying that off kind of thing. You know, you think of these people like, you think of people like the mass murderers, Pol Pots and whatevers, and you think, well, they're going to have to be coming back and maybe experiencing a lot of destruction in their lives over quite a certain amount of lives to pay back that debt that they've created. The universe likes balance in the books.
But why?
Because Saturn is exalted in Libra. And that shows that it's about the balance of, you know, balance is mastery in life. If you can balance your karma, well, then you're off the mortal coil, aren't you? Like balancing the books.
Yeah, but do you think, like, in terms of that, do you think, like, I often think, is the belief of that what creates a cycle? Like, to me, I almost look at this as like my experience is a dream.
Yes.
Like the purest form of that, it's like a game. You know, like it's not real in a sense.
Well, it is, because you're gaining skills and knowledge, and that is real. Like, you're not going to take your $1 million bank account with you. But you're going to take you know, the knowledge and the skills that you've gained from an incarnation with you.
Well, my thought
for good
is,
or ill.
Yeah, but my thought kind of was like, is the belief that those, you know, like that you need this evolution, is that what creates the need for evolution? Like, is that what makes the game seem real? Instead of like,
I guess it depends on the level of consciousness, Pete, doesn't it? Like for some people, like people will say, well, I don't believe in astrology, and I'm saying that's fine. It's like saying I don't believe in Spanish.
Yeah.
And you don't, you know, you don't have to believe in astrology for it to work. You don't have to believe in Spanish for it to be spoken. And I mean, some questions are like just unanswerable too, Pete. That's the great mystery of life, and we've been here for billions of years and we still haven't figured it out. So have we really evolved?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I always think of Esther Hicks, Abraham Hicks, where she says, like, you're never going to get it done. Like, that's, like, the purpose of the universe is, like, expansion. And it's like you're just kind of always trying to expand, but there's never really, like, an end. Like, the goal is kind of just expansion.
That's Rahu for you.
Yeah.
That would be something that Rahu would say.
Yeah.
You don't need spiritual moksha. You just need to expand eternally.
Yeah.
Well, but it's when we're not attracted to the material realm, when it means nothing to us, that's when we do the spiritual exploration.
Well, it's like, yeah, like if you're, it's only when you
when
stop.
People become dissatisfied with existence.
Yeah.
Start looking on a deeper level.
Yeah, or like when you stop seeking the guru appears.
Yes.
So like if you're always trying to expand and grow, it's like you're reaching for it instead of like having a knowing.
You're increasing your karma.
Yeah.
You're increasing your karmic debt.
Yeah, because I always think of like people, you know, you see the spiritual, you know, genre on social media, and people are always saying like they need to heal themselves, but it's like if you're always searching for healing, you're always going to be searching for healing. You're never going to view yourself as enough.
Yeah, or accept that, and we've all got it, I accept that we're all damaged goods in some way or another. Yeah. And that's just because we're here on Earth. And life is hard. Life is not fair. Life is a bitch and then you die.
Yeah. I've always been a fan of your stuff. I love your knowledge. I love the monthly or moon.
Yeah, your monthly subscription.
Yeah, I love that. And it's funny because it's like I listen to that and it's like it's almost like it prepares you for what's coming.
And that was my intention with them.
Yeah.
To let you know that that's where the moon, the moon, because it's such a powerful influence on Earth. So wherever the new moon falls, it's going to trigger that, you know, and it even kicks in before the new moon. Have you noticed that?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like it's not just, you know, it's even the weeks before the new moon, you can feel that influence coming.
Yeah, so
Inspired. That service. I was inspired. As you probably know, I've practiced Agnihotra. I've practiced that for nearly 13 years now. That's a daily morning and evening fire with the circadian rhythm of the sun. And I got this really strong message: you must do moonthlies. I'm like, okay. That's what. So and it's been great. People love them. they're so juicy.
Yeah, well, I just, for me personally, like, I remember, like, I just, it makes me kind of be humble in a sense, I feel like, because I...
And that's a good thing, Pete. That's a good thing.
Well, because it's like, you know, I know I've gotten reports where, like, it's like, don't get sucked into, like, certain things. Like, you might get into something at work. And it's like, I remember, like, you saying that. And, like, somebody pisses me off or triggers me. And it's like, I'm like, just be humble. Like, you don't want to have any backlashes from whatever you do or say. And it always kind of plays in the back of my mind. I thank you for
that.
Do
you get a good result, though, with that information? Like,
for sure.
Right.
But it's funny because, like, I feel like certain people react differently to certain phases of the moon. Like, I feel like I get really anxious or agitated or feel like kind of more triggered on a new moon, where a lot of people say they feel that way during a full moon, where in a full moon I feel more at peace and more whole.
Yes, like, and it's probably because you're in tune with it through the monthlies as well, yeah. Because as you know from receiving these personalized reports, the new moon is an inauspicious time. It's and particularly the day before the new moon, that it's because it's the end of a cycle. We're all tired. It's inauspicious. It's death and dying, and you know, quite a lot of negative incidences do occur on new moon because it's the time of Shiva and Kali. It's the time of destruction. Whereas yeah. full moon is the time of Vishnu and Lakshmi, and yeah. it's the time of celebration, and you know, because we can see in the dark at the full moon. Things are illuminated. We get revelations. We get, and that's, you know, and also the quarter moons. Have you noted the quarter moons, the first quarter, which is when the moon's half a, this is Ashtami Tithi, we call it. The lunar, it's fascinating because we've, in Western astrology, they use 8 lunar cycles. In Vedic astrology, we use 30. We use 15 waxing from new moon to full moon. So there's 15 tithis in that fortnight, and then there's 15 tithis from full moon to new moon. So there's 30 tithis. Yeah. So there's 30 moon phases. And the moon phase that you're born on tells you a lot about your life. It's the tithis are so juicy with information. So I can understand that certain lunar days like that, the 14th, that's the Mahashivaratri. There's Mahashivaratri. That's the 14th lunar day, the day before the new moon. And then every lunation too, we have the 9 nights of the goddess, the 9 days of the waxing moon. But there's only 2 that are really at the, just after the equinoxes, that are very powerful when the goddess descends actually, you know, to Earth. Mother Nature is in her spring or autumn garb, I could say.
Yeah.
So yes, I can understand, and it's really good to get in tune with that lunar rhythm, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel like I'm much more aware of it, and then I'm much more aware of how it affects my own personal energy and the energy around me, you know.
And you can plan accordingly then. Like a really good example was, you probably didn't even hear about it over in the US, but Australia recently had a referendum, you know, the yes vote or the no vote, to include Indigenous people as a separate arm of the government.
Yeah.
And it was, the referendum was held on a new moon, on a solar eclipse. And people were saying to me, Carolyn, you know, what do you think's going to happen? And I said, well, if Australia, I looked at Australia's chart as well. I said, if Australia was going for a job, like a referendum is like a new policy, I'd say that Australia's not going to get that job. So I say it's a definite no. It's not going to get up. And it was an outstanding no. It was like in some places there was like 80% of people voted no. But overall, it was like about 70% no, 30% yes. So that's a really, like, and people say, oh, the government uses astrology. I'm like, well, they must have a really bad astrologer. Because yeah. I would have said to them, like, yeah, you know, like, you, that's an inauspicious day. It's a definite, there's no result on a new moon. And they literally got a no result. But the eclipse, they made it their big no result, you know?
Yeah. Well,
so that's why you, if you like, if you wanted to get a no result, you'd do it on a new moon.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, like, I feel like Western astrology, they try to say, like, new moon is for manifestation. And
yeah, they got it all wrong.
Yeah, because I know I usually do manifestation when you can first see the moon. I can't think yes. of what that's called.
That's Pratapaditithi. That's just the crescent. That's as soon as you see the moon in the northwest. That's your green light.
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah, something new is starting. I mean, it's funny because a lot of this stuff is symbolic. You know, it's like there's a new thing. It's like a growth, you know, or a new beginning. Yes.
Like plants, you can experiment planting seeds a couple of days before the new moon, plant some a couple of days after the new moon and see the difference.
Yeah.
And you'll see the difference in the growth.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I feel it, you know, like I'm aware of when to do it and when not to do it, just based on how I feel, you know.
You're very intuitive.
Yeah. The new moon just feels like chaotic to me. It feels like a stir, like it just doesn't feel good to me. Like I don't even like being out at night on a new moon because I feel
very, very, yeah, because new moon is dangerous.
Yeah.
It's dangerous. There's a lot of dark energy at the new moon. And that's why if we have a new moon solar eclipse, that's like danger on steroids.
Yeah. So, maybe we should get into, like, what you think the new year is going to bring.
Yeah, well, we've had a few shifts already. Rahu Ketu have been in Aries and Libra for the last 18 months, and they just shifted. Mean Node shifted 30th of October. True shifted 28th of November. So now Rahu Ketu, all the eclipses are going to happen in the Pisces Virgo axis, and Libra and Aries have got some relief because Rahu Ketu have shifted. So that's a fairly, that happens every 18 months. Rahu in Pisces straight away, even before Rahu was going in Pisces, because Pisces is obviously a water sign. Just where I live, I'm in rural Darwin, Northern Territory, Australia. And so everybody's fish in their fish pond. They'd get up in the morning and all the fish were gone and they're saying, what's eating my fish? And I'm like, that's Rahu. Yeah. Rahu's eating your fish. Rahu's very hungry. Like it wasn't just one person. It was quite a few people. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. So the sea, the trouble is now in the sea. So I've noticed that, you know, they're sending all those ships over to the Gulf and the ships in the sea and one's been bombed and that's where the trouble is now in the ocean. So we're going to, like, even those water events, Cairns here in Australia over just before Christmas had that enormous flood event with that cyclone coming around and really washing away roads and all sorts of stuff. So we can expect some inclement weather, water events, particularly around eclipses. And particularly that 9th, it's the 9th of April in Australia, so the 8th for the US. That total, the first eclipse of Rahu on the 9th of April is in Ravati Nakshatra. And that's the 27th Nakshatra, and it's ruled by Pushan, the nurturer. So that eclipse is going to be, and that one cuts the US in half. You've probably seen that one coming.
Yeah.
That one's, and then everybody goes out and watches it. I'm like, oh, my God. And then everyone goes, lunatics. So Vedic astrology says don't watch eclipses because what they are is it's like they open up portals where negative energy comes in. It's like a universal dump of negativity.
Well, So it if makes you go sense.
If you go and watch an eclipse, your life gets turned upside down and lots of changes. And the amazing, like that, they called it the Great American Eclipse of 2015. I don't know if you remember that
one. Yeah, I do. I remember that, yeah.
And everybody went and watched it, and it went from Oregon there over in the west and basically cut America in half. And since then, the country's been completely divided, hasn't it?
Yeah, I actually remember that because I remember you telling me, like, don't watch solar eclipses. And I remember, like, watching TV and you just see, like, everybody on their lawn.
I know, watching everybody's them. Watching it.
And I'm like, oh, that's great.
And, you know, and you can probably see the turmoil and the change that that eclipse brought.
Yeah.
From 2015, you know. Eclipses always bring that political intrigue, unknown circumstances, you know, change. It's like a washing machine cycle. We get, you know.
Yeah. No, definitely.
We get a big, yeah. And the eclipses are so good for spiritual work. They are so good for spirit. So the eclipse, 9th of April, there's a lunar eclipse on 25th of March. So April is very turbulent. The other interesting thing that's happening, and I was like, oh, my God, the other night when I was looking, I was like, ooh, that's a bit how you're going, is Mercury. Mercury, as a lot of people now are familiar with Mercury retrograde cycle. And Mercury does this 3 times every year. It's not unusual. It's very predictable. But this, like Mercury has just gone through Gandhanta. Gandhanta is the end of a knot, and there's 3 of them in the Vedic zodiac. Mercury just went through Scorpio Sagittarius along with his enemy Mars. And in April, Mercury's going to go through the Pisces Aries Gandhanta. And then later on in August, he's going to go through the Leo Cancer Gandhanta. So this indicates that there's a lot. What's going on is a lot of adversity where 2024 we're confronting a lot of danger with its roots in the past. And this is that Gandhanta nut. It's like where the past meets the future. So we kind of have to pull the weeds up out of our garden so they don't choke the roses.
Yeah.
So darkness cannot last forever, can it? You know, there's definitely going to be a crisis or two without, and I think that April is very, very, it's loaded with a lot of we've got the eclipse on the 9th of April, we've got the Mercury Gandhanta, and we've also got on the 20th of April, we have Uranus-Jupiter conjunction at 27 degrees of Aries in the star of fire, Kritika Nakshatra. This is one of your nakshatras, Pete. This is the nakshatra that spans Aries and Taurus. It's the star of fire. It has the ability to cut and burn. So with Jupiter and Uranus there's, you know, a lot of speculation, and you can speculate as much as you like, but there's obviously Jupiter is the planet of opportunity and expansion, and Uranus can be a bit of a shocker. He usually brings some shocking, unexpected events. He's also the oddball of the universe. He's been called the Great Awakener, but he brings chaos. So April is looking fairly chaotic for sure. March, yeah. April. Venus does the combustion thing this year. Every 9 months, Venus will retrograde and turn into the morning star, which happened about 9 months ago. This is the Venus cycle is really interesting, Pete. And when Venus is morning star, it's more warlike. And we know that it's certainly been warlike for the last, you know, since that October 7th, but also prior to that. The Mayans used to use it as when they go and conquer territories, they'd make sure that Venus was the morning star before they go to war. The Mayan calendar is very connected with Venus because Venus is considered the sister planet of the Earth. So Venus combustion in June, where Venus will no longer be the morning star, but she will go very close to the sun, combust, and then pop out as the evening star. Venus rules finances. So also on the 2nd of May, Jupiter goes into Taurus, and a month later, Uranus goes into Taurus, which is the sign of resources, finances. And we have the Venus combustion. So May, very difficult for financial issues. Financials, I don't know. I'm not a stock market person, and but finances are going to be burnt and fried. Let's put it that way, because Venus combustion, that's what happens with Venus. She gets burnt and fried. Yeah. So in May, there is the Eternal Day. That's the day when the sun is exalted and the moon is exalted, the 9th of May. If you were going to get married, that'd be a good day to do it. This for 2024.
That's my wife's birthday.
Pardon?
That's my wife's birthday.
Well, do something very special for her on the 9th of May.
I'll try.
Don't bloody argue, whatever you do, because otherwise you'll end up arguing eternally.
Yeah.
All right. It's the day they go and buy, you buy gold, you do things that you want to last forever. It's a good day to buy gold, for example, you know, as an investment. So May, June, you know, we've got the Venus combustion. That's going to happen in Rohini Nakshatra. Then July, we kind of get like a little bit of a break in the story. By September, we've got another lunar eclipse followed by a solar eclipse. And what happens, like last year and the year before, we had solar eclipses before lunar eclipse, and they're a little bit more kinder. But 2024, we go back to lunar eclipses before solar. So that means that people are going to be on the streets protesting.
Yeah. Just in time people for elections.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of protests. Because this is what we call a moksha eclipse, because there's a lunar eclipse before a solar. And moksha eclipses tend to, people are going to argue. People are going to fight. People are going to, like, lots of marriages break down. Lots of, you know, and that's why I say to people, don't argue in an eclipse. Don't fight in an eclipse. Just agree not to argue and talk about it after the eclipse, because everything during an eclipse is like everybody feels it so intensely and they're so pissed off and they're full of this negative energy and they make bad decisions. So it's a turbulent kind of time. September 18th, a lunar eclipse, and October the 3rd is a solar eclipse. And then right at the end of the year, we have Mars going retrograde, which happens every 2 years. Mars, though, is the planet that retrogrades the least. As you know, Mercury is regular at it. He does it a lot, three times a year. Venus does it once every 18 months. Jupiter and Saturn are regulars, but Mars doesn't do it very often. So, and Mars is going to be retrograde in Cancer, and it's debilitated. So at the end of the year, it's like the Martian energy is pretty dead and flat and going through a lot of turmoil and change. So that's kind of, April is really pivotal. April is like the most adverse month, and maybe October. So darkness cannot last forever, and that eclipse, I think it lasts for about 5 hours. So we look, 5 hours is about 5 years. The rippling effect of the eclipse happens. And then those degrees are also like tripwise. So when planets go over them, they kind of trip the eclipse energy and recycle it. The universe is a great recycler.
Yeah.
That's why even reincarnation is like we're being recycled, we're being refined and purified of our desires.
What do you think? I know it's a general question, but like, what do you think the best options are for you to deal with the eclipse energy? Because I feel like.
Yep, go on.
Oh, no, I feel like, I know I'm comparing it to Western a lot, but I feel like sometimes people associate with certain eclipses with, you know, different types of energy, but I feel like, your opinion might be different than that.
Yeah, well, because their eclipses will be occurring in a different sign too,
Yeah.
because they're
So.
using the sidereal zodiac. So, I mean, Ketu in Virgo is great for gaining knowledge. Because Ketu is interested in knowledge, because that's the only thing really that we take with us, knowledge and experience. And that's like what our past is made up of, knowledge and experience. So, and I think there will be a Mars Ketu conjunction too, and that's pretty nasty. That's more towards 2026, really. Yeah, so solstice is also a bit of a turning point, that 21st of June, which all solstices are. There's also a Mars Saturn square, which is a bit of conflict too, which is around that from the 16th of March till the 23rd of April, Saturn and Mars are clashing. So that adds to that intensity of March, April, May energy. So there's a few kind of degrees that are really activated this year, which is like 21 degrees of Aries. So if you've got any planets there, you'll be feeling this major change. That 28 degrees of Pisces is also being activated. So there's certain degrees, if you've got planets there too, it's like there's a lot of action happening for you this year. Especially if you get an eclipse on your birthday, for example, your life is about to change.
Yeah. I mean, this might be kind of out of nowhere question, but
I love out of nowhere questions,
what,
Pete.
well, first, like, what's your personal belief or experience on aliens? Like, what's your perspective? Even if you, even Vedically, like, what do you think, like,
Me
outside?
personally, I think those little grey ones are not extraterrestrials. I think they're inner terrestrial. I think they've always been here.
Okay. Just them, or you think
That's
there's anything besides that? Like, what's.
well, the universe is full of all sorts of stuff that we can't see with our naked eye, Pete. There is all sorts of beings that are all through the universe, and whether they fly in spaceships or whether they have just teleportation, or there's definitely, we're not the only realm here. And I, as with anything, I think there's good ones and there'll be bad ones. And it could be a con job too, as well. I'm very cautious
Yeah.
with it, I'd say.
Like what do you feel like the Vedic view of extraterrestrials are? 'Cause I know like most deities are like there's a lot of deities that are blue, which are often associated with like extraterrestrials.
Yeah, like Shiva. Well, the story, I don't know, do you know the story of the Ramayana or the Ramayana? Like the
No.
story with Rama and Sita and Ravana, the demon, and they built the land bridge, and they said that was all a myth. But they flew home in they flew home in a Vamana. They flew in a spacecraft from Sri Lanka back to India. And that's what Diwali is all about, the night of the lights, because they couldn't, they didn't have runways back then, so they had to put all the candles out so they could see where to land. So, if you have a look at Indian, even Mayan sculptures, there's all sorts of beings within spaceships.
Yeah. Well, what I was trying to get to actually was that do you believe that there is, like, if you had to pick some sort of astrological placement for some sort of, revelation in terms of ETs, what do you think it would be?
Well, eclipses will reveal. Eclipses reveal things that are hidden. And they're quite good at doing that. And sometimes they're just mundane hidden things. And other times they can be spectacularly hidden things.
Yeah.
I would say also, I presume aliens flying in the air, you know, like they don't travel through the dirt, do they? Or some of them do the water, don't they? So the air element is ruled by Saturn and Rahu. And Rahu is the eclipse point. And Rahu is what's foreign and unknown to us. So Rahu would also be a trigger, because he's a foreigner too, and this is something that would be foreign to us. Even though we've heard about aliens, like, you know, since we were kids, hey, you know, like everyone's heard about aliens. But they're still foreign, like it's still speculation, isn't it? Like I could speculate, I've never been to America, I could speculate what it'd be like to be a foreigner in America. But I don't know because I haven't been there. Same with you, you know?
Yeah.
So I would say probably Rahu and Saturn. Also Uranus, because Uranus is the oddball, and Uranus is – it awakens us to stuff that we've previously been unaware of.
Yeah, because I just off the top of my head, when you were talking about Uranus and Jupiter, it came to my head.
That conjunction, yeah. Yeah. So that's in Kritika Nakshatra. That's ruled by the sun, the S-U-N, and it's a quite a powerful nakshatra. It's the Cutters. It's where the Pleiades reside. It's the star of the Pleiades. And its ruling deity is Agni, the god of fire and transformation. So this is the power to burn and cut away stuff. So this might be, you know, Jupiter's our beliefs. So our beliefs might get a bit burnt and a bit shocked.
Interesting.
With what, you know, or fire. You know, the other thing that is a bit of a worry is that, you know, like nuclear fire. That's like, that would be the biggest shock of all, wouldn't it? And I certainly don't even want to entertain that, but it, you know, a colleague of mine was saying that, of course, we do the charts for things like Chernobyl and Fukushima and such to get an idea of the planetary energy of what the heck was that about, you know? And I think it's about the 3-degree Scorpio sign that was rising with Chernobyl. Don't quote me on that, but... yeah, we're probably in for a few shocks, that's for sure. A bit of adversity and humbling, like you said. Like, we are just like a grain of salt besides the universe, you know, the massive size of it is incomprehensible to our pea brains. We can't comprehend a lot of what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking also, like, you spoke of the Pleiades, and I was thinking about, like, you know, energetically when I do some work, like I feel like certain awarenesses that I associate with different stars and stuff like that. And, you know, in terms of like how you spoke of like the planets kind of influencing you, do you think like, so the specific stars, I guess, could influence you too, obviously, right?
Particularly if you have a planet on that star. Like if you have a planet on, for example, there's a star at 3 degrees of Pisces called Sheet, S-C-H-E-A-T, Sheet. And like it sounds, it's a bit of that. So Neptune will be conjuncting Sheet. And this has a very intense reputation It's a very turbulent star. It's very unpredictable. There's a lot of loss and gains with this star. It's got a reputation for ships and shipping as well. And so Neptune is going to station on that star, and that's going to bring the water events and the trouble with shipping. And we can see that happening in March, of course, from March. So that's an example of one star. But then there's stars that are benevolent, like we have the star Spica in Libra. And if you have it's a beautiful, bright, shining star in Libra. And if you have any planets connected with that star, that's going to propel you to fame. A good example of Spica is, I'm sure you've heard of him, Paul Hogan, Crocodile Dundee.
Yes.
He's got his sun on Spica. Oh, no, I think it might be his ascendant on Spica. So he became really well, like everybody knew him, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah.
So that gave him the fame. And that's the other thing that Western astrology really doesn't use, the stars, because that's what it's all about, isn't it, the stars? So there's all sorts of stars that give different sorts of results. So we have the four royal stars, the one in Leo is Regulus. Everybody would know the heart of the lion. There's one in Scorpio, which is Antares, the heart of the scorpion. There's one in Aquarius, Aquila, the eagle. And then there's one in Taurus, Aldebaran, the heart of the bull. And they're called the four royal stars of Persia. So if you have any planets on those stars too, obviously each star has a different flavor. So, for example, Antares. You don't get to see Antares in the northern hemisphere. We get to see, it's a beautiful, huge, big constellation. And that red star, it certainly looks like Mars. It's called the false Mars. Because it's red and it's right in the middle of there of Scorpio. And when we have a planet on that, well, it's very Martian kind of energy. So, I can understand how you can tune into them. And the stars really give us our personality in a lot of ways. We're made up of stardust, mate.
Yeah. So just because I want to touch on something else too is I've often told people something that always like stuck with me when I was doing work with you is I believe it was when I first went and started Ketu. I was telling you that I was feeling like this sense of like lack, or like, you know, worried about money and financials.
Yes.
And I was like perfectly comfortable at the time. It wasn't like I was out of a job or anything.
Yeah.
And I remember feeling like it almost wasn't me. It was like coming from like an outside source.
And you're like your subconscious.
Yeah, like stuff. I wasn't really, it wasn't like it was actually me worried. It was like, it was almost like it was being brought to my attention.
Yep.
And I remember talking to you about it, and you were like, you told me the answer was like to have more Venus kind of energy in your life. And I remember you said to put a copper cup of water filled with water in the southeast corner of my house.
Southwest,
and I remember doing it, and like I don't know if it was like placebo effect, but it instantly changed. Like I felt a significant shift, and it just like blew my mind.
Goosebumps, yeah.
And it blew my mind that like me putting a cup of water in a corner of my house is changing how my mind feels.
Yeah. This is Vastu as well. Vastu is another arm of – have you heard of Vastu?
Yeah, it's like the feng shui.
Yes, yes, yes. And that's a great cure for Rahu Ketu. That's why I suggested it. And this is the power of Vedic astrology. Like Western astrology can't do that.
Yeah, No, and I was like, I was just, it always stuck in my mind because I was just like how, I don't know how the universe works. If I could put a cup in a, of water in a certain direction in my house and it's going to change.
In a copper pot, in a copper pot. It must be in a copper pot.
Yeah. And it's going to change how my mind reacts, you know? So what I kind of wanted to get to is like, if there's any, obviously a lot of people struggle with like their Saturn return. If you could give maybe some general ways of, you know, helping these energies or ways to help influence for the better.
Well, you know, like you've really got to look at people's charts. So like you can talk in general terms. So for example, Saturn, like Saturn is such a, he's such a big player in our universe. Now everybody, so Saturn's currently in Aquarius, so he's looking at Leo. If you've got any planets in Leo, Saturn is the taskmaster. He will deny stuff, he'll delay stuff. So working with Saturn is learning discipline and responsibility and being organized. So if you're feeling kind of the Saturnian pressure of fear and worry and lack, and that's the cure, just to be organized, to be, you know, quite often Saturn will come along and it kind of freezes you and you can't even pay the bills and then you leave everything and then that compounds the problem. So, and Saturn can be difficult to please Saturn. Like some of the very simple things for Saturn is if you see a crow, feed it. If you see a black dog or a black cow, feed it. If there's any, if Saturn comes across your path as an omen, which he'll turn up as a crow or a black dog or a black cow, or even black people are ruled by Saturn. So if you're starting to see these omens, Saturn is talking to you. He's wanting your attention. So give Saturn your attention. If you run away from him, he's going to come out. You might see one crow, and if you run away from him, he's going to come after you with a murder of crows, mate. So, you know, he's like, oh, you're going to run away from me. This is going to be fun. All right. Come on, guys. Let's go. You know, so you've got to face reality with Saturn.
So now when you say it's, you know, he's wanting your attention, now you would recommend, like, almost appeasing him in a sense, like
if he's absolutely
showing, like if he's showing, no, but I'm saying like if he's showing up like that, you're saying like maybe you need more discipline in your life.
Yes, or, you need to be responsible.
Or like I view Saturn as like the Old Testament God, you know, like that's,
oh yeah, okay,
like that
I'd be very careful. Yeah. Yeah, he's the best spiritual teacher, and I'm not sure if the Old Testament God would be that way inclined.
Yeah.
So Saturn, even though he'll if you work for it, he's going to give you the reward. Saturn is he rules slaves, you know. So you can be a slave to Saturn. A lot of people are slave to the money, aren't they? How many people are slave to money?
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, like we've got to not presume that we think that we know Saturn either, because then he can say, you think you know me? Well, yeah, let me show you how much you know me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, actually, it's a practice you gave me when I was struggling with, like, my everyday job. I would dedicate, like, if I was feeling burnt out from it, I would dedicate my day of work to Saturn.
Absolutely. And did you find it easier?
For sure. I definitely felt that shift when I did that.
Yeah, because you're working with him.
Yeah.
And it's that's like the thing.
Yeah, it's like to me, it's almost like a energetic, you know, what can I think of the word right now?
Exchange. Exchange is like pretty good.
Yeah, an exchange or even like a sacrifice to him, in a sense.
Yeah. Well, like, a lot of the, that's an offering.
Yeah, offering's a better word.
An offering to him, offering. Because you've got to go to work anyway, so you're not really making a sacrifice, but it's your attitude that you've offered.
Yeah, so I felt like that really shifted a lot, especially in terms of how I viewed work, because it started to become more of a sacred thing to go to work.
Yeah, beautiful, because you've got that Saturn in your sixth house of work too. So that's why I suggested that, because then you're working with it, you know?
Yeah.
You're enhancing the energy.
Does that mean I'm always going to have to work a job that I have to do that for?
Well, not necessarily. It depends on you, like the multiple choice there, Pete.
Yeah.
Like, Kedu Saturn's coming for you in August 2024, so you'll probably get the shits with your job by then, I'd say, and you want to be going to much more healing, like Ketu wants to do otherworldly things. As you know, Ketu's not particularly interested in this world.
Yeah. No, I mean, Ketu, I feel like that's coming, so I don't know. It's been on the horizon, it feels like it, actually.
Yeah. Well, and he's in your workhouse too, you know, so he's certainly going to be putting a bit of pressure on you. And that's why people, if you feel the pressure, that's Saturn. So you could just, you know, one of the most simplest cures for Saturn is, Saturn, please be kind to me. And then he's got your attention straight away and you think, okay, I'll be a little bit kinder, but you got to get your shit together, mate. You know, he's that kind, and that's a good influence. That's Saturn teaches us discipline and responsibility. We can get all the good qualities of Saturn, which is being conservative, you know, and I don't mean that in a political sense at all. It's just like, you know, watching, even like you said, sometimes you feel humble, and that's a good thing. That's what Saturn does. Saturn will humble you. And being humble is not a bad thing. It's actually quite good for your spiritual development, humility, you know.
Yeah.
It's a good thing. So we want to get the good qualities of Saturn, because he's relentless. He's inexorable. Until he gets your attention, and he's gonna keep pressuring you. He's the guy that turns grapes into wine. He turns coal into diamond by the pressure. That's what, you know, so if you're a grape on the vine and Saturn comes along, he's like, I shall pick you up and crush you. And you're like, oh my God, I'm going to be crushed by Saturn. But then this transformation comes and all of a sudden you're fine wine. You're like, phew, you know?
Yeah.
So it's that kind of energy. Saturn also will, it's really good for shadow work and working with your blind spot. So that's another thing that you can do with Saturn. So we want, you know, Saturn brings things like pain, literally pain. It makes you feel like an old man if you've got Saturn transiting. You feel timid, you feel doubtful, you're pessimistic and you worry and you get lonely and you feel isolated and you don't want to go out, and then you get stingy and then you get disappointed and then you don't trust anything, and then you get suspicion and you get doubt and you get melancholy and everything's unsatisfactory and you're full of pessimism, you know, this is all Saturn kind of influence. But if we can work with Saturn in the right way, we can get the good qualities of Saturn, which is the discipline and the responsibility and the, you know, the practicality and the realism, which is really important with Saturn, the durability and the consistency. And Saturn also likes a certain amount of asceticism. So that's why if you're in a Saturn period or having a heavy Saturn transit, fasting is one of the most simple cures for Saturn. Fast on Saturday. If you fast to your capability. So if you've always been a meat eater, you might think, well, I'm not going to eat meat on Saturdays. I'll restrict and limit myself so Saturn doesn't have to do it for me.
Yeah, so it's like you're bringing his work to him instead of...
Yeah. Rather than him rubbing your face in it and dragging you there screaming.
Yeah, I mean, I always did that. I did fasting on Saturdays for a while. I typically always, like if I clean out something and say like clothes or something, I'll donate it on Saturday. Great.
Yeah. One of the cures for Saturn is to donate black or dark blue blankets to homeless people on Saturday.
Yeah. Like,
so, and I'm... Obviously, it's getting cold over there, so they might appreciate that too. So you could also, you know, working with old people, Saturn represents old people. So if you knew old people, you could go and say, you know, do you need any gardening done or any rubbish taken away or any jobs done? That's also will please Saturn.
Yeah.
Well, so there's lots of cures. Yeah, there's lots of, like, once you start working with them, like with your work, like, we could make our own kind of remedies for these difficulties that face us with Vedic astrology, having that knowledge.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I think one of the biggest things with Vedic is the remedies. You know, it
offers, absolutely.
It kind of offers you answers instead of just like you're at the beck and call of Saturn without being able to like balance the energy a little bit.
Exactly. The Upaya is another extraordinary feature of Vedic astrology. And I love that. And, you know, quite often people will say, oh, I've been doing that anyway. And I say, well, like, maybe up it a bit. Like, you know, if you've been doing 5-minute meditation morning and night, well, maybe take it to 7 minutes. Like, slowly increase it. So if you've, because that's what Saturn wants. Once we've mastered something, go up a level. So we're achieving self-mastery in it. But I often say to people, like, they're like, rightio, I'm going to go do this, 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 and this. I'm like, no, just start really small. Start with one small thing, a simple small thing. Do it the same time every day and do it with great love and dedication and build on that. Keep it small and simple because that's the best solution with Saturn. Like even just in the evenings going out and saying, facing west, deep bow, please be kind to me, Saturn. That's a simple remedy, and it's like a spiritual Panadol. I feel better now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just in general, I mean, I think having some sort of daily spiritual practice is going to make your life better.
It's an absolute must. With where we're going, it's an absolute must. It's make it a priority. People, make it a priority. That should be it. Whatever your it, whether it's prayer, contemplation, make it a priority.
Yeah,
definitely. Because that's like Rahu and Saturn are very similar. So working with Rahu, you know, we want to compensate. They call it parahara. We want to compensate for, you know, for our desires, and that's prayer, fasting, discipline, philanthropy, you know, service. Seva is one of the great cures too. Like if you're feeling depressed, go and do some volunteer work in a kitchen that looks after homeless people. And you'll probably find that you're actually pretty okay, you know?
Yeah.
Visiting homes, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, like I think about that all the time, like anything going on, you just see, not choosing sides, you see what's going on in the world, and it's like, you know, I got a pretty freaking good.
Yeah, exactly.
People, you know?
Exactly.
Is there any other things you want to touch on before we wrap it up? Is there any last advice you want to give? If you have
stay
to,
calm.
Stay calm. Yeah. Hold on and stay calm.
And listen to your heart. Listen to your heart. Your heart is very wise. Your heart has that's the place where the spirits can talk to you in your heart. You know, the good spirits, that's where good things happen in your heart. So definitely, you know, listening to your heart and maybe even observing some omens. Like people, they say, oh, I knew that was going to happen, you know, but they don't, like, more consciously, like if there's that crow hanging around, Saturn's coming, you know, get organized, get responsible. Look at that, you know, listen to that feeling in your bones, that is really important that we do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's really my practice, is like, anytime, exactly. I do anything, I just breathe into my heart and bring my awareness there.
Yeah, and your heart is the seat of, you know, that's the throne of your existence.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So if anyone wants to get, you offer sessions, readings.
I do. Vedic astrology, tarot combinations, quite a variety of sessions there. I only do monthly reports for people once they've had a session with me, so you know what I'm like, but monthly reports. I'm on Facebook, The Barefoot Vedic Astrologer. I'm on Instagram, The Barefoot Vedic Astrologer, and I'm also on Telegram, The Barefoot Vedic Astrologer, and I'm just migrating my, I'm also on Substack now.
Oh, cool.
Have you heard of Substack?
Yeah, I signed up for it. I had writings that I was going to put on there, but I never, there's so much stuff I try to get on, and it's just
too much sometimes. No, I'm just using that for my newsletter service, because I was with another server, and I like Substack because people can reply to the writing.
Oh, that's cool.
Like you can, you know, once you read. So yeah, if you can sign up for my Substack newsletter. I'm in Australia, but I consult, like I've consulted with people in Iceland, would you believe?
Wow.
How about Iceland and London? And I had this big swathe of people come through from the Caribbean. So yeah, America, wherever, we can Zoom, or if you're interested in my service, you can go and have a look at my page and see if you're interested in my work and take it from there.
Awesome. I highly recommend you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. And thank you for being on here, and I appreciate what you do.
It's great. Thanks, Pete. Thanks for inviting me. Really appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
Yeah, you too. Bye for now.